You're listening to another great podcast in the MyMac Podcasting Network.
Welcome all to our show. All the news you need to know. Simon and Rose are sure. All the stuff that you enjoy. Apple stuff for you girls and boys. The essential Apple is here for you. With Apple and technology news. Watch Apple TV, Central Apple for you and me. Apple stuff to fill your brain, security drive you insane. Simon and Nick will help you out, help you know what it's all about. Come on, let's hear you shout, Central Apple, the Central Apple is here for you.
Hello and welcome to the Essential Apple. And that rather interesting ditty was written by me and performed by Suno.ai. I've been having some fun playing with that. After Carl and Guy were on my Mac, and also I think they mentioned it a bit on the Mac and Forth show, I thought I'd join in the fun and have some playing around. So I went over to Suno.ai and made some songs. And that's the one I rather like. But for what it's worth, I'm going to play you some other pieces I made. Some with the lyrics by me, which you just heard. And also some of my earlier attempts where I allowed Suno to write the lyrics, so I won't necessarily play all of these clips, but here we go. Let's have a listen to some of the other things I managed to make, all generated with very short prompts, to be honest, and in a few different styles. So here we go. Here's another one. So there you go, that one is rather more of a heavy rock influence, and here's a different one.
Welcome on our show, all the news you need to know. Simon and Nick host the show. On all the stuff that you enjoy. Apple stuff for you, Mac girls and boys. The essential Apple is here for you. With Apple and technology news. Mac, iPhone, and iPad too. HomePod, AirPod, watch Apple TV. Essential Apple for you and me. Stuff to fill your brain, the security stuff drive you insane. Simon Nick will help you out, help you know what it's all about. So come on, let's hear you shout.
So there you go, there's a bit of bluegrass for you, and let me see, what else can I find here? I made loads and loads. You get 50 credits on Suno to create songs, which works out at 5 goes a day, because it's 5 credits or tokens to per song, but it generates 2 for each prompt, 2 different versions. So what about this one?
Gather around, y'all, listen to my tale about a podcast that'll make your spirit sail. It's called Essential Apple, hosted by Simon and Ed. They'll bring you news that'll make your heart tick. They deliver Apple news for the techies to me. From Cupertino to the big old Apple store, they'll keep you up to date, yeah, that's for sure. On the Essential Apple Show, it's a hoot and a holler. They'll spin you the news and make your day brighter. With Simon, Nick, friendly and informed.
Apple style. They'll get your Apple loving heart up and down.
I can't remember which one now have got my lyrics and which have got the Suno-generated lyrics. So let's see what one this one is.
Turn off the volume, let the cooling fan scream. We're rocking Apple, this ain't no dream. News and views, technology, all that's hot plus security. Crunching the numbers, dissecting the code.
There you go. That's one that that's one of the early ones where I let Suno write the lyrics, which was not bad, not bad. I will put a link in the show notes to my library of generated songs, so you can all go there and poke around in the things I've made, should you like. And just to show that it can do pretty much anything you like, here's one that my boy generated simply by entering a couple of prompts. And mind your ears, because he's a fan of black metal. So here we go. And by the way, it generates show art as well, or album covers, I suppose. Here's another little bit of black metal, and then we'll move on to something else. Just to prove it can make pretty much anything you like. And it's incredible. It's incredible. As you might have noticed in the one I played for the intro, I told it I wanted live stadium prog rock. And, well, you certainly got a fairly live performance kind of feel from that one. So there you go. And all of this is a little bit of a lead-in, really, because I've been playing around with AI, and as you know, I've also played around with some images. And so for this show, I thought, because I was going to talk about AI and maybe some of what it actually means, I thought I'd go to Bing and make some images for the show art this week. And because I'm talking about AI and have a few other things to discuss about AI, I thought I'd create an image of some angry editors and artists and photographers attacking a robot, an AI robot. So I thought I'd put that in, and I got some rather interesting images. So first of all, I got a fairly sort of isometric cartoony style picture with a robot playing a keyboard like a synthesizer, but he was surrounded by people with cameras, and it looked more like they were all impressed with him rather than angry. I got another image of, again, a robot playing the keyboard, and this was more of a sort of infographic-y style, I suppose, surrounded by people waving newspapers and holding up cameras behind him. But again, it didn't really feel like they were angry at him. So I thought I'd change the prompt a bit and have another go. And I said, a bunch of newspaper editors, photojournalists and musicians attacking an AI robot. These ones were definitely made the people look a little bit more angry, but most of the images again had the robot surrounded by people who appeared to be fascinated and taking images. So I boosted it again, and I asked for some photographs. I will put these in the show arts. I will put these in the chapter headers, or a whole bunch of them in here, and you can have a look at them. Quite interesting. Again, then I asked for some photographic style images, and these ones I changed it to say they were an angry mob. They were much more angry looking in this, but still not quite what I was looking for. By the way, I asked for a 4:3 ratio photograph in most of these, and it still refused to do that. It just gives you a square photo, whether you like it or not. You do get some AI weirdness in this, though. Like, for one image, the robot is standing to the side, looking somewhat perplexed, while a man with an afro is actually sitting at the keyboard with everybody shouting at him. So that one was a bit strange. Then I said, I want them people to be even more angry. And this time I got some quite good images that I quite liked. There was one I really did like, and it would work for a show art if you cropped off the bottom, because there's some definite AI weirdness going on in this image. There's a hand sticking out of nowhere. There's an arm like a shirt sleeve with no arm attached to it. There's a guy in the foreground who appears to have two left hands for no good reason. And there's another arm that's not attached to anything. But there you go. That's AI weirdness for you. And finally, I did some more. And on here you get, I don't know, 14, 15 credits a day. And you can go past that, by the way. You get usually 4 images for a credit from one prompt. And you get, like I say, about 15 a day. So actually you can generate a lot of images. You can go after that, but then the creation is much, much slower. They're called boosts, I think. And in this one, I said I wanted the angry mob to be armed with weapons and guns and things. And I got some quite interesting images out of that. I got one which was appeared to be a musician, a human musician, but with a robot head. A lot of people throwing things at him, cameras and guns firing in the background. For some reason, there's a black crow flying overhead. No idea what that one was about, but there you go. And I got some other ones I really like. You do, again, see some weirdness. There's people waving newspapers with indecipherable text on. One headed newspaper. And finally, the one I really like. I really like this one. The robot is at his keyboard, surrounded by painting and paints and pencils and newspapers. He's typing on a keyboard. He's got no screen. He's got coffee and beer in front of him. For some reason, there's a pair of human hands coming out of the bottom. I don't know what they're supposed to be doing, but there you go. And I will stick these in the chapter art as best I can so you can have a look. So there you go. So that was fun with AI, but part of this was prompted because some of my earlier experiments I talked about in the Slack room, and Suffolk Pete said, you know, should we all be afraid? Is this, you know, with AI making music and photographs, pictures and writing adverts and creating articles, are us creatives under threat? And I had some thoughts about that. I thought about it for a while and I thought, you know what, sort of, but not really. This stuff is a fun toy and it has uses. It has definite uses. Obviously, creating show art is easy. Creating little ditties. I think, to some way, my thought is that AI is likely to democratize some of this stuff in the same way as desktop publishing allowed people to create better documents and also some absolutely awful ones in the early days when people didn't really know what to do. But it doesn't create anything new, really. It just rehashes, you know, stuff from the large language models that are out there by trawling through thousands and thousands and thousands of images and so on. So it's fun, and I think in the longer term, it will settle down, just like desktop publishing settled down, just like everything else, And will become a handy tool. It's useful for people like me. It's also will probably be useful for creatives. They want a specific image and so on. But as people get used to AI, people will be able to look at stuff, I think, and go, that's an AI-generated image. Obviously, AI will get better and better, and it will become harder and harder to tell. But to some extent, this sort of AI, this sort of generative AI, is it really any different to the clip art and stock photography of old? Is it different from the copyright-free music libraries you can visit and get music from, the sort of pieces I've lifted in the past for, you know, intro and outro music? That's all obviously created by humans, but it's been put up on the, you know, on there for free for anybody to use. In the past, I've heard certain designers and artists say that, you know, that sort of stuff is cheating. No proper designer should use clip art or stock photography. But that's nonsense. That's absolute nonsense. In a professional context, almost nobody has the time or the budget to organise all this stuff themselves. Nobody can be a videographer and a photographer and a great designer and a typographer and, you know, an illustrator and all the rest. This is why clip art and stock photography and music clips and video clips exist. And to some extent, AI is just churning through that stuff on your behalf. I had some thoughts about where AI could go and become really useful, where I thought AI could actually really help people. One of the things, and by the way, obviously this is coming from my professional background, but I'm sure there are other uses in specific industries. But for example, if you want a stock image, for a project, you often have a very specific idea in your mind of the image you would like. And it doesn't matter how many stock photo libraries you have access to, searching them can take you a very, very long time indeed. Sure, they have search. You can search through and say, I want this, I want that. But you will still find yourself choring through hundreds of images looking for something that you feel is exactly what you want. I think AI assisted search for finding images, be it clip art or stock photography, could be really useful, where you tell the search agent exactly what you want, and it does a much better job of finding images rather than simply using keywords, which is horrible. And another thing in my professional life which can take a long time, and that's identifying a particular typeface. If somebody gives you something and says, I like this typeface, or here's my business card, can you do me a letterhead in the same style? And if they don't know what the typeface is, you can spend a long, long time looking. There are some quite helpful sites on the web which will help you identify typefaces, but nothing like an AI agent. An AI agent that could look at a sample of type and tell you either exactly what typeface it is or some likely typefaces would save people hours. And I mean hours. You can spend hours trying to track down a very specific typeface. I'm thinking that AI, as it is at the moment, which is really just machine learning, it's huge language models where the machine has been taught to identify and sort through images. The sort of applications that I think it could be put to at the moment, which would be really, really useful, is more to do with recognizing things, searching for things. Imagine somebody, let's say a car mechanic being given a car part from, let's say, maybe some 1970s car, and a bloke says to him, can you find me one of these? An AI would probably be far better at trawling through the web to find that object. And I'm really sure, and I believe it's already being used to do this, but I'm really sure that medical applications is somewhere that AI could shine. If you train an AI model on thousands or millions of medical images, you know, scans, be they cancer scans, x-rays, all sorts of diagnostic imaging, I'm sure an AI could probably be much quicker and more accurate at flagging up scans which have something that needs, you know, to be assessed by a doctor. Even I wouldn't trust an AI, I don't think, to make a diagnosis, but I would certainly trust an AI to pull out from, you know, a huge catalogue of, let's say, mammograms, the ones that it thinks should be reviewed by humans. These are the areas right now I think AI is going to shine. Is AI going to take over our jobs? I don't think so. I think it might, in time, become a massively valuable assistant. Will it cost jobs? Will it take people's jobs? It will take some jobs. It will certainly take some jobs. Just think how many researchers and so on are often employed in various industries. I think some of those are going to suffer. The creatives will get squeezed again. But people, I think, in the end, always come back to appreciating true, innovative, quality work. And an AI can never give you that truly innovative, creative stuff. It just can't. So that was my thoughts on that. And somebody, you know, the other day said to me, do you think AI is the next big thing? Is AI going to change our lives in the same way as the web? Well, if you've listened to this show, you've heard me say before, I didn't think the web would change the world in the way it has. I thought it would be big and I thought it would be important. But when the Mac user had a cover which said the web will change the way you live and work, I kind of thought, nah, it won't. So I'm afraid I'm not the person to make predictions about that sort of thing. I suppose AI could become the next big thing. It could become the thing that changes the world in the same way as the web. But I think it's more likely become a serious assistant. Something that people rely on to assist them to do their jobs or to help them do research and that sort of thing. Yes, that will cost jobs, but it will create other jobs in other areas, I'm sure. So I don't know. I'm not the person to ask about future predictions. I'm not very good at that sort of thing. And just for what it's worth, I have to say, I've been, I read the news, I read web articles a lot, and I have spotted some which are blatantly written by AIs. They have all sorts of things in them that are dead giveaways. They repeat themselves. They make weird word substitutions occasionally. Their grammar can sometimes be somewhat stilted. I'm sure they will get better at all these things. I'm sure there are some AIs, large language models that are much better than others. But the minute you can usually spot it, you can get away with a short article by a generative AI, a couple of paragraphs or so. Longer than that, they start to ramble. Images, particularly photographic images, if you look carefully, you will often see AI weirdness. Things involving logos get distorted. Lettering is weird. Odd people have odd extra fingers and arms and so on. It can be quite telling if you look closely. But there you go. That's enough about that, I think. And we'll go on to the news, I think. The news for the last few days. So I will start, I think, with the obvious. It's that Apple have announced, of course, WWDC 24. Unsurprisingly, June the 10th, and running for, what is it, the usual 4 days. I have no doubt that somewhere or other there are people crowing that they predicted this. Yeah, I could predict that. Second week in June. second week in June is almost always when it's WWDC. There's an interesting, as usual, sort of graphic logo. Very, very simple this year. Very, very simple. Was it created by AI? Because actually it says VVVDC24. No, us humans can figure out it's WWDC. But yeah, if you actually look at it, it's triple VDC24 in what appears to be probably a sort of Helvetica-esque type. And it's filled with what looks a bit like the coloured patterns you get when you interact with Siri. And that's it. That's all there is. Nothing else. So it's interesting. Obviously, Joz made a tweet. I'm still going to call it a tweet. I'm sorry. I'm not going to call it a post on it. He made a tweet where he said it would be, I forget now, absolutely interesting or intense or amazingly something. Anyway, he capitalized the last words, which were obviously AI. So if that's not a dead giveaway from Joz about what's coming, I really don't know. And there we are. We'll have to wait and see. That's what I always say. I have no doubt we're going to hear quite a lot of stuff, and I think it's going to be quite an exciting WWDC this year. There's plenty of rumours that iOS 18 will be one of the biggest changes in the history of iOS. And I have another story here, which is, let me find it, that Apple's AI may run purely on device. And why not? Why not? We know Apple like their privacy. We know that they've released papers recently talking about how they can make their large language models smaller and more efficient. So I don't know, but I quite like the idea that Apple might do most, or if not all, of their AI on device. It would be very Apple of them, but I don't know. I think, most of that article was predicated on the fact that Apple have published this paper about how their language model, which I believe they're calling Realm, is faster, more efficient, and more compact than traditional large language models. So I'm looking forward to finding out what they have to say about that. What else is in the news? WWDC is announced, we start getting all the rumour mill firing up and a whole bunch of other things. This one I had was from Tech Radar, which says Apple's M4 plans could make latest MacBook outdated already, which is nonsense, of course. Mr. German has apparently leaked or predicted that an M4 Mac refresh could be expected sometime this year. And then he's put forward a timeline where he specifies a low-end 14-inch MacBook Pro with M4 around the end of 2024, and so on and so forth. If you actually look at the timeline more carefully, that's not particularly surprising. Apple released the first M3s, obviously, at Scary Fast last October. Admittedly, the M3 MacBook Air was a bit laggardly, and some of the other M3 machines are still to come. But if we're talking about introducing the first M4s, with maybe basic M4 chips at the end of 2024, isn't that in line with Apple's usual kind of cadence? This would not surprise me. New 13-inch and 15-inch MacBook Airs slated around spring 2025. Oh, wow. A year after the M3 ones. Really? I was half tempted to put this in Vinny and the Squirrels, to be honest, because there you go. And talking of the squirrels, Donnie sent a link to the Slack the other day of a study which had decided that, gosh, dogs can understand some human words. Yeah, really? Duh. I think anybody who's ever had a dog will tell you that a dog understands some English words, or any other language, of course. If, you know, I'm sure plenty of dogs speak German, or Albanian, or, you know, Swahili. Of course they do. There we are. So, I didn't think a great deal to that. It's Mr. German making great predictions, which actually, when analysed, I think, are pretty obvious. Also, apparently the first game emulators are now coming to iOS App Store after Apple changed the rules a little while ago, a month or so ago, I believe. Probably either under pressure from US and EU authorities or in order to help ward off further pressure from them. Apparently, one of the first ones which was put out, which was called IGBA, I guess that's Game Boy Advanced, was pulled. This is apparently because it appears to be an unauthorized clone of MU64XL, which is still available. So I guess somebody was having a cheeky grab to nab some cash off somebody else's work. So MU64XL, which is a Commodore 64 emulator, IGBA now pulled. It says the only way to use most of these emulators legally will be ripping the code from the original discs or cartridges which you already own. Otherwise, technically, you could be on the wrong side of the law. But that's a little bit of a grey area, but, you know, really, I don't... If somebody makes a BBC B micro emulator, which I believe they already do, I don't think anybody's going to come after you if you're trying to run some really, really old BBC micro games on them and you didn't get them by copying the code from a disc or stashed in your back of your wardrobe. But interesting. But game emulators are now allowed on iOS, which is probably a good thing for most of us. Not that that's something I'm overly interested in, but there you go. We've had news from Apple were in Vietnam. I believe Tim Cook took a trip there and has said that they are committed to continuing strengthening connections with the country. No doubt, obviously, as some diversification from China, and I believe they have pledged to invest more money in the Vietnamese supply chain. And according to this piece on 9to5 Mac, they are supporting a scheme intended to bring clean water to more than 42,000 children in Vietnam by the end of the month. So that's good. Apparently, Apple has spent nearly 400 trillion VND, I guess that's Vietnamese dollars, through the local supply chain and has doubled the annual spending for Vietnam in the same period. So, here we are. What does it say here? The company highlighted its support for clean water and energy initiatives. As part of the company's commitment to environmental protection, Apple has cooperated with the global clean water organization Gravity Water to install advanced rainwater storage systems in schools at Hoa Binh province in the north of Vietnam, and with Apple support, the organization is on track to reach its goal of reaching 131 schools by the end of the month, providing safe water all round to more than 42,000 students, teachers and their families. So there we go, that's all good, and apparently Apple is working with the TRE Foundation to install solar battery systems in schools in rural Vietnam, supporting children's curriculum on sustainable development and STEM. So they are Apple doing what Apple does, whilst also doing good for themselves, I guess. That's nice, it's all good stuff. Apparently, Pixelmator Pro has had an update, and it's now, according to BGR, one of the best ways to edit PDFs on a Mac. Pixelmator Pro, of course, is a photo editing app, as we all know, but apparently now you can edit text in PDF files just like text layer included in Apple's PDF support from Safari Keynote or Pages. In addition, Pixelmator Pro update adds the ability to create customizable outline around text layers and a collection of bento grid templates for the same. So, it's an interesting take from Pixelmator Pro, but I guess nothing wrong with that. If it's something you've got and now you can edit PDFs with it, that's great. And apparently it pulls the text into a text layer to make it easy to do. All good stuff. Apparently, this is quite good news, I believe. Apple's self-service repair program will now let you repair your iPhones with used parts. Now, we know that Apple like to protect our privacy and our security by pairing parts of the iPhone to the motherboard, as it were. It has an ID, and in the past there's been outcry and backlash because you can't use certain parts, reuse certain parts. You had to have a genuine new Apple part, and it required some specific tools, I believe, to pair the thing. Anyway, apparently, now Apple has acknowledged a problem with this restriction and amended the policies for the self-service repair program. With this policy change, the company will allow users or third-party repairers to fix iPhones with genuine second-hand parts. Now, this is in part because they have now altered the way that the part pairing system works. Unlike before, calibration of a genuine Apple part, new or used, will take place on device after installation. This will, for example, enable the reuse of Face ID or Touch ID. In addition, it will include support for used biometric sensors in future iPhones. Apparently, it's doing this in part by extending the activation lock feature, which is aimed at limiting iPhone thefts by preventing lost or stolen iPhones from being reactivated. It'll also now discourage the disassembling of such stolen phones for parts. So there you go. Apparently, you will now be able to use second-hand Apple parts. And I read somewhere else that Apple will also be changing the notifications on device to show. Currently, it will show if you replace a part, for example, a battery or a screen, that this is not an actual Apple part. It will now be able, I believe, to say this iPhone has a second-hand screen, or this iPhone is a replacement Face ID camera or whatever, but they are, genuine Apple parts, but they are second-hand or reused. So I think that's a good balance overall, I think. Apparently, this will mean if you've got, you've got a broken iPhone and you've replaced it with another similar iPhone, and something happens to that, you may be able to salvage parts from the broken one, which is good. It's a good thing, I think. There we are. So, changes to the self-service program coming or out now. Apple's 17.4 browser choice in the EU is under fire despite increased adoption of other browsers, apparently. This one is from iMore. It's not a particularly long article, but as far as I could make out of it, it says here, Opera, Ecosia, Brave and DuckDuckGo have seen increased usage, as has Vivaldi. However, the CEO of Vivaldi told Reuters that the process is convoluted, that it's easiest for users to select Safari or some other known name. Well, to be honest, from what I've seen of this feature, it seems to be exactly what you'd expect. It's a selection of the most popular, I believe 24 of the most popular browsers in the area of the EU that you live. And I'm pretty sure, to be fair, that nobody's going to install a browser they haven't heard of, are they? Would you? Would you install a browser you've never heard of? I'm pretty sure I wouldn't. Or if I did, certainly, you know, not just cause. So, certainly not as my default. So, there we go. I think this is just slightly sour grapes, to be honest. They've got what they asked for, and some of them are saying it's making it harder for users to move away from Safari. I don't see how that works, to be honest. Before, you got Safari, and that was it. Now, you get presented with a screen, if you're in the EU, which allows you to pick another browser of your choice. And I'm pretty sure most people will either go with Safari or choose a browser they're familiar with. Why would you not? So that's that one. Apparently, Apple has quietly added Qi 2 charging to the iPhone 12, and I guess every phone afterwards. Apparently, this compatibility has arrived with no fanfare as part of 17.4. I assume this would also apply to the 13 and 14. So, you can now, if you wish, get a Qi2 charger which supports the higher rate of charging than the basic Qi. And it will now work with your MagSafe iPhone 12, or I'm guessing later. There's no comment in this statement from The Verge, but there you go. Security and privacy news this week. We've got a piece here on iPhone lockdown mode explained as mercenary spyware attacks target users in 92 countries. If you're not aware, a mercenary spyware attack was discovered. Threats were sent out to iPhones across the world, and Apple said it sent out threat notifications to customers all across the world. If you've had one of these, it means you might have been targeted by a mercenary spyware attack where criminals can hack your phone remotely from somewhere else in the world. Obviously, if you've received one, I'm pretty sure you're a person of interest. Otherwise, you're not likely to be at risk. A mercenary spyware mercenary attack is one which previously probably would have been called state sponsored. Apparently, most people are dropping that, probably simply to avoid getting in trouble with foreign governments. But Apple, were made aware of this attack. I believe it's something in the same mode as the Pegasus type attacks, and so Apple have sent notifications to those likely to be affected or known to be affected. And this is Lad Bible, who give you a helpful reminder of how full lockdown mode works, which of course is not recommended for average users because it shuts down all sorts of services. And I've got some worth of chirps here. How to reduce photo file sizes on your iPhone. This is a little piece from Slash Gear, which has some handy hints on reducing the size of your photo library or photo storage on your phone if it's getting a bit out of control. You've got the obvious one, turn down the photo quality on your iPhone or switch to the high efficiency HEIC format. Clear your recently deleted stash in the Photos app. Don't forget, when you delete photos, they don't actually go away. They go into a bin for 30 days. So if you're trying to make space, remember to actually empty the bin. And it says here, lots of stored photos are one of the reasons apps drain your data. Many messaging apps have built-in tools to compress photos people have shared with you. Make use of that. You can go through your chats, particularly if people share a lot of photos with you. Turn live photos into stills. remove duplicate photos from burst mode, merge duplicates, and so on. So that's on /gear. Probably some handy tips. I have one here which is called fix cannot be opened because the developer cannot be verified error. That's not really an error. That's a feature, not a bug. But for those who don't know, here's some hints and tips on how to open an app that the Finder tells you, you know, isn't verified. The main one, of course, is as long as you know it's a safe thing, simply right-click on the app and tell it to open, and that will give it, you know, that will open it with administrative privileges, and remember that. But there's also some hints on here, you know, on safety measures. If you are, you know, if you are going to open an app, you're not sure of its provenance. So that's on TechPP. And this one's also from TechPP, and I'm mentioning this because I didn't even know about this one. Apparently, how to remove line under battery indicator on iPhone. Apparently, I didn't even know this, but apparently if you have a line under your battery indicator on your iPhone screen, on your lock screen or on your screen, that is because you have blocked the control center from being opened whilst in lock mode. So I guess I've never locked my control center from being opened while in lock mode. But there you go. That tells you how to turn it off if you've got it and don't want it, or how to turn it on if you don't have it and would like it. And it's a very simple do. Basically, in settings, in Face ID and passcode, turn off the toggle or on the toggle under allow access when locked. Simple as. There you go. And just for a snippet, because I found this amusing, this is not new. It was reported here on Apple News, you know, the Mirror, which is a, the Mirror. Well, it's not as bad as the Sun, let's put it that way, but it's not exactly what you'd call a top quality newspaper. Anyway, this is not a new story. I've seen it around the web several times. I believe they even mention at the very end that Apple responded this actually occurred in 2022. But anyway, I bought fake Apple AirPods from Amazon and was shocked at what actually arrived. And what actually arrived in this case were iPods the size of hairdryers. Yes, whoever bought these, I assume, was looking for those cheap knockoff, look like iPod AirPods that you can buy for sort of 20 odd quid. My boy bought some a few years back. They're just basic Bluetooth earbuds, but they're put in what look like Apple iPod cases. They look like iPods. They come in an iPod-style case. I think some of them even show up on the screen as iPods. But they're just basic Bluetooth earbuds. Anyway, this pair are huge. They're like the size of a hairdryer or something. I assume they're, you know, basically novelty speakers. There you go. I found that amusing. Not what they were expecting at all. But there's a photograph of them. And yeah, they're a pair of iPods, AirPods, but they're like the size of a handheld hairdryer. Very good. Very funny. There we are. And that is it for this week. There was no show last week because it was my fault. It was my fault completely. I was supposed to meet Nick at 5 p.m. to record, and I got lost doing something else, completely lost track of the time, and by the time I realised what time it was, Nick had unsurprisingly got bored and gone away, which I completely do not blame him for. Utterly my fault. So there you go. And this week, I believe Nick has a choir engagement, something to do with the church services and his choir, so there was no Nick this week, hence me rattling on. But back to normal next week, and I hope to see you all again then. Don't forget the Mission to Seafarers appeal for old but working smartphones and internet-capable tablets. Links on how to help with this if you have any old tech laying around that you would like to donate. And other than that, I guess, see you in Slack room. Don't forget, you can join the Slack room from the show notes, and you can find me on Twitter as @Serenak, S-E-R-E-N-A-K. And until then, I'll say goodbye. Toodaloo! For listening to us here on the Essential Apple Podcast. We appreciate your time. If you'd like to make a small donation towards the cost of our show, please feel free to visit our Patreon or our Pinecast tips jar. You can find the links in the show notes. And if you've already contributed or do already contribute, thank you very much. We really appreciate it. And thank you very much. This show is part of the MyMac Podcasting Network, where you can follow such excellent shows as Tim and David on Geeks Hub and also the Tech Fan Podcast. You can find Elisa and Melissa with their most excellent, geekiest show ever. And of course, you can find Guy and Dallas with the MyMac Podcast itself. So why not head over to MyMac.com and check out some of the other shows on the MyMac Podcasting Network.
Hello, I'm Guy.
And I'm Gaz, from the MyMac.com podcast. And we're here to tell you about a very serious condition plaguing Mac users everywhere.
It's known as BPSI, or boring podcast sleep induction. It can happen anytime, anywhere, while listening to dull podcasts and driving.
You can prevent BPSI by subscribing to the MyMac.com podcast on iTunes. Our podcast is many things, but never boring.
Available without a doctor's prescription. The MyMac.com podcast is not responsible for loss of bodily functions while laughing. Side effects include blurred vision, nervous tics trying not to smile, angry yelling when we say something wrong, and the inability to call our Skype number, which is 703-436-9501. Women trying to become pregnant should not be listening to the MyMac.com podcast, as it will take time away from having sex, which you normally need to do to become pregnant.
So remember, listen to the MyMac.com podcast. Think of the children.
Been the Essential Apple Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show and we look forward to you joining us again another time. Until then, goodbye.